Welcome back here to wrap up the weekend edition of the KE Report. I am introducing a new guest to the weekend edition. However, I have chatted with this individual and posted some of his articles over the last about month and a half now. I'm happy to report that I am chatting with Doc Jones. He is a private investor. As I mentioned, he has shared some of his research reports on some of the companies that he likes, ranging from resource companies to a recent energy or oil company that he shared with us. I have received a lot of very positive feedback on the back of Doc Jones' interview, so that's why I'm featuring him on this weekend show. Now, Doc Jones, we are going to jump around to a number of different topics, but I know a lot of our listeners do want to hear your thoughts on gold. And what I want you to outline is, look, the fact of the matter is gold continues to correct. It's now over 7 months, almost 8 months long of a correction now. What are some of the major factors that you think are contributing to this pullback?
Hey, Corey, thank you for having me back. I think there's a number of factors that some investors may be overlooking if you look at the broad picture of things. If you start with the IMF, the IMF have come out with their forecasts for this year and next year of GDP growth. And you have what's happened because of COVID, that you have the business cycle has been reset for every country, and every country is expanding at the same time. The last time that we had this kind of robust growth was after the Second World War. So we're looking at a great time in the economies, which means there isn't any fear out there, right? There will be inflation in the system, but primarily that will be in energy and base metals and materials. And if you're a gold miner right now, if you look at the cost inflation on your inputs, you compared to last year, because investors generally compare to the year before. You have oil prices from last year that have doubled. You have timber prices that are up 400%. You have steel prices at multi-year highs, aluminum prices at multi-year highs, interest rates that are higher, labor costs, which are going up. And you have a gold price that has declined compared to the last year. So margins are being severely compressed, as well as you have the 10-year treasury that is rising consistently. And they've been recently floating in the media about a 3% on the 10-year to see how the market will respond to that. And so far favorably. And part of that too, that you need, that I personally think that we'll get a 10-year treasury at 3% within the next 12 to 18 months, because the Federal Reserve needs a tool for when we do go into the next recession to bring us out of it. And historically, that has been at least 300 basis points of cutting of the rates. And they're not going to go to negative on the rates. In real terms, you can have negative interest rates, but the U.S. Is not very motivated to go less than zero on their 10-year. So these are all the factors that are lining up against gold's favor. And there's no fear out there. Why would anyone be afraid when you're looking at one of the greatest economic expansions that we've had in decades, right? And if you have a mind, your input costs are just rising. And people are looking forward and they're seeing, okay, higher interest rates, no fear, lots of economic expansion. So the trend for the gold price is lower.
Yeah, that's very true, Doc. And one other thing that I want you to elaborate on here is that your comment there, margins are getting compressed, even as some of these miners are building up some nice cash positions. But as you said, the market's forward looking, right? And their costs keep on escalating while their product is actually declining in price. So this could be a very key factor as to why the large investors have more or less shied away from the sector.
Yeah, especially if you look at their highest input costs, which tend to be energy, and some of the forecasts out there, Goldman Sachs and Bank of America, other places looking at a $70 to $80 oil price. You know, for all those mines that run off of diesel generators for their power, and especially open pit mines, it's a double whammy, right? You suddenly, your mine was profitable at, say, I don't know, 1700 gold, your margin is 20%. Well, the gold price declines 10%, or $100, you were making $200 an ounce, now you're only making $100. But then you factor in these other factors of cost inflation on the input side, and you could have negative cash flow, right? So the bar gets raised as what's profitable, not only because of the declining gold price, but the increase of the inputs. So and those are hard things to model, because we don't know what could happen potentially with, for example, the energy price, which is one of the largest inputs. If we do get some kind of parabolic spike in energy because of shortages, then that's not something that people want to participate in. And you see it, you know, juniors will come out with a great drill result and they will sell off on it. Whereas last year, when I was 100% precious metals, by the way, I am by no means, I do love gold. You know, I'm not someone who says, oh, gold is a worthless asset. I think it's a very valuable asset. And it has it's done its job over the last few decades of maintaining its purchasing power. But currently, there's more risk on the downside than to the upside. And with the higher interest rates, that kind of absorbs any growth in money supply or inflation that you'll see in the gold price, where the inputs will be rising faster than the increase in the gold price, leading to declining margins. And this happened last time in the bull market towards the end for gold, where even though the gold price was $1,700, $1,800, $1,900, the margins were compressing because the input costs were rising quicker than the price of what they were selling, the gold price, right? So that's kind of the balancing act. You know, if your inputs are rising faster than you can increase your prices, then that's not a recipe for success.
You are correct on that one. Doc, one other quick question regarding yields is you mentioned that there has been the whole 3% yield floated in the market. You talk to gold bugs, though, and they're saying the market, the system can't withstand higher interest rates because look at all the debt in the system. That will cause this big collapse and rush people into gold. You clearly don't follow that mindset.
Well, it's frankly not true. You know, they can print as much money as they want, right? That's a reality, right? The money supply has grown exponentially, but is the world still turning? Are economies still running? They are, right? So there's not a direct correlation of money supply growth to the rise in gold price, right? So that's really as simply as I can put it, you know? And when yields rise, it also makes it less attractive to invest or hold gold because gold doesn't pay a coupon. Or if you can get 3% or on a 30-year at that time, if you got 3% for the 10-year, maybe the 30-year is paying 4.5%. So people will gravitate towards that.
So Doc, I'm a bit worried to ask you this question, but do you think the gold bull market is over?
Well, I don't think it's over. I think with the amount of expansion going on globally, that will take place over the next 2 years. I think like I've prepared my portfolio. I still hold, I have about 20% in gold equities, but they're just ones that have a mineable resource at 1500 gold that have a resource, right? That I can quantify and say, well, this company's trading for, you know, $10 an ounce in the ground. They're cashed up and they have an excellent team and they have the potential to bring in a resource greater than 3 million ounces, right? Because that's what the market needs now. They need a resource at least 3 million ounces for a major or mid-tier to want to acquire. And, you know, there's many different metrics. Also, you know, like Cassiar Gold, for one, their last drill program, their finding cost per ounce was around $2. And that's relevant because they already have a resource. It's mineable. If it was just they found 100,000 ounces on its own, who cares how much it costs them to find it? Even if it costs them $1, no one's going to start a mine for 100,000 ounces. But they have about 1.5 million ounces now, you know, which could be a small mine on its own. And they have the opportunity to possibly expand that beyond 3 to 5 million ounces once they start drilling the Table Mountain, where they have a high grade epithermal system there. So I don't think the bull market is over, but I think the next 2 years it will underperform or a year and a half. Once this stimulus wears off and the market will start demanding higher rates, rates will have to climb until something breaks. And after things break, then the period after that, after we are in a recession, they start cutting rates, that's when gold will start performing again.
Okay, so there's a time frame for everybody. I wish it was a little bit more optimistic, but I don't disagree with you there, Doc. You do outline a number of very valid reasons. Let's talk about some sectors that you are interested in then. The last time we chatted about the oil price, energy broadly, but especially oil. Oil has pulled back a little bit, but still is at these relatively higher levels than where it was for the last, well, little while, over a year now. Doc, how do you still feel about the oil sector?
Yeah, I think it's the best value in the market right now, especially the Canadian oil sector. Like there are companies trading out there. Their free cash flow multiple, they're trading. They could essentially, keeping their production flat where it is and keeping the current prices flat within 3 years, buy back all their stock and all their debt. It's just, yeah, there's just such a great value out there. And there's a lot of tailwinds for the gold, not for gold, the oil sector. You know, you've got, as we've talked about before, you've got the U.S. has a policy now against expanding production or having drilling on federal leases. They're basically doing everything they can to curb shale production in the future. You have the North Sea, the UK, talking about banning new leases in the North Sea, which is going to limit future production. You have OPEC, which is limiting production. And then you have this great economic expansion, and GDP growth is directly correlated to energy consumption. And the highest growth year over year in GDP are in countries or in the less developed world, where they tend to use a lot more fossil fuels, China and India, which classically use a lot of fossil fuels as far as energy. So, I'm just pulling something up here now, you know. Oh, yeah, like there's a, like one of my, if I talk about a company, chances are I own it like this offhand. Like I do own Cassiar, I own i3 Energy, which I will talk about. That originally when analysts did their report on this company, they did it in November when oil prices were $39 a barrel, and for the year they had the free cash flow of $17 million US. Now at today's oil price, their free cash flow, the oil price has gone up about $20 a barrel, but their free cash flow has increased 100%, right? And at $70 a barrel, their free cash flow, it would take them, their free cash flow yield would be 62%, which means that they could buy back all their debt, all their stocks in less than 2 years. You know, and there's a lot of companies in Canada like that.
So is it a Canadian focus then? Because the Canadian oil companies have really lagged.
Yeah. I think they're the best value because they've always been the most conservative with their debt as compared to their U.S. counterparts. People forget that the reason why we've had such great economic growth in the last decade was at the expense of shale. Shale was basically uneconomic, but the United States pumped so much money into it to keep the price of oil low to satisfy demand so that they could experience high economic growth and the rest of the world could. Otherwise, we would have ended up in a protracted recession, basically because of high energy prices. You know, the discovery of shale, being able to get oil out of the source rock, took the United States from being a net importer to a net exporter and satisfied demand in the market that otherwise wouldn't have been there. Supply in the market that wouldn't have been there, you know. So, and in Canada, like they're starting to export, build capacity to export to not only the United States, which is historically was like their number one market, but to get it to China, to India, to the UK. And they also have the advantage of their fixed cost. us are in their local currency, which is Canadian dollars, which is about at a 30% discount to the US dollar, which they sell their product in. Plus, there had been historically a lot of differentials, high differentials for like Edmonton sweet crude. Used to have like a $10, $12 differential against WTI, which means if WTI was $60, they would only get $48. But now those differentials are almost gone away, where the differential is like only $2 because there's such a lack of supply right now. And more capacity has been built to get that oil to market. It's really, really quite a great time. Like, you know, some of the number one performing stocks in my portfolio in the last year have been in the oil sector. There's been many of them that have gone up 500-700%. And they experience the same kind of free cash flow growth that the gold producers did at the beginning of the cycle last year. Whereas you've got a lot of producers that were just capturing a very small margin. Say when oil was, you know, $40, that they're only earning $8 a barrel. But then oil at 60, suddenly their margins have expanded 400-500%, you know, and the cash flow just compounds immensely. And they pay dividends too. You know, it's nice to own something that's growing double digits, that has no debt and is paying you a 3-5% yield. That is growing, right? Plus Canada also, there's a new play that was discovered in 2018, the Clearwater oil play up in northern Alberta, where it is the most economic play in North America in the tier one area and in the Martin Hills area of the Clearwater play. The IRRs there on the oil wells that they drill there exceeds 1,000%. They pay, those wells pay out in 7 weeks. And they cost like $1.2-1.3 million to drill. And then in the tier two areas where the company I invest in, it has acreage there. Those wells, the IRRs on them are like 400%. They pay out in 6 months, you know. And then and these are conventional wells. So there's no fracking. They don't use thermal to make the oil flow. They're just open hole completions, and the oil just flows naturally. You know, it's really incredible. Like, there's so much money to be made up in Canada right now, and it's so overlooked.
Okay. Hey, Doc, I appreciate these insights. And look, I know the pressure on gold is shying some people away, but there are some opportunities elsewhere in the resource sector. And oil, it's something that we had talked about, but sharing some of your thoughts and some of the really data, the fundamentals, why you like these companies, it does make a whole lot of sense. I look forward to having you back on the show again soon, Doc. And I hope everybody enjoyed this weekend show. Please keep all the emails coming. Fleck@kereport.com. I love hearing from all of you, and I especially love hearing your thoughts on the companies that I am bringing on the show. I'm starting to make a bit more of a push too to bring on some other resource companies. So please, everyone, let me know what you think of those companies and any questions that you have. It really helps me follow up with those companies and get your questions answered. Doc, Jones, everyone else, I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend and a very happy Easter to everybody this weekend.
Thank you, Corey. You as well.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.